Danielle's, Elder and Mrs. Ormondville, New Zealand. September 8, 1893. Elder and Mrs. Danielle's. Dear brother and sister, here we are at last where they have been calling us to visit for weeks back. Since we came, we have had some sunshine. When the sun does shine, it seems like a very pretty place. But I do not think I would like to make my home here. We are expecting Willie today. It is now more than 3 months since we have seen him. Emily and I came yesterday. Sister McCullough and her little girl were with us in the train. They had gone to Napier to spend a couple of weeks, but when they heard that we were coming to Ormondville, they came back with us, and so they only had a few days' stay in Napier. Brother McCullough, his wife, and child have had a severe time of it. They have suffered much with throat difficulty. They are better now since the winter weather has gone. They have had 3 weeks of beautiful, sunshiny weather. But just as soon as we reached here, it set into raining, just spring showers. Brother and Sister McCullough are situated in a very unhealthful place on low land. Water stood under the house all winter, and their stay there has nearly cost them their lives. Several good souls have embraced the truth. I was introduced to several last night. They had an appointment out the evening I came, Thursday, and I spoke with much freedom. The little hall was filled. I spoke with great plainness and told them that we were not at all ashamed of our name, Seventh-day Adventist. I explained the reasons for our faith which are in harmony with the name. The words did seem to have power with them. Several testified that they had never heard anything like it in their life before. I dwelt particularly upon the Sabbath of the Fourth Commandment, and in regard to the promise of Christ in the first 3 verses of John 14. Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. Verses 1-3. After the meeting closed, we made our way to our hired rooms in the house of Mr. Grant, nice, pleasant, convenient rooms. But it was a dark night, and the roads were muddy from the recent rains. We could not see where we were putting our feet, and it was much farther than I had thought. Emily had insisted that I should not walk, and it was a mistake my attempting it. They thought I could not ride in a 2-wheeled trap, and a 4-wheeled buggy was not the most convenient, for the road was narrow and the horse not the most manageable. But all these things are my lessons. I thought I knew better than Emily, but it proved I did not. We are now to take a ride, although it looks as if it was going to rain. We had a pleasant ride, although it threatened to rain. We went only about 2 miles, for we were to meet Willie, who was coming on the noon train. He came, and also a brother Codling from Palmerston, who had lately embraced the truth. Willie thought it would be a help to him to come and attend the meetings in Ormondville. After they have taken dinner, Willie accompanied us, and we rode 5 miles to Norsewood, where Brother Anderson had been laboring. There are 2 families who are keeping the Sabbath in that place. Several are convinced, but do not come to the point of decision. We called on 1 Norwegian family. I did not get out of the carriage, but they came out to meet us. The brother was all crippled with the rheumatism. I did pity him so much. They must have very close times now to earn means to support their family, but God will comfort and bless them if they will put their trust in Him. We left an appointment that I would speak in Norsewood Monday night. The Sabbath would soon come, so we returned to our hired rooms. We hired a bedroom for Willie so that we could be together. Sabbath, September 9th. I spoke, in a house of worship well filled with believers and unbelievers, from Isaiah 58. I again presented the Sabbath, showing its importance, and that it was not to be regarded as a matter of little moment whether they shall decide to obey the light given or reject it. I read to them from the 31st chapter of Exodus, where it is plainly stated that the Sabbath is a sign between God and His people throughout their generations forever. And I read and remarked upon the words spoken by Christ, enshrouded in the pillowy cloud, to Moses from Deuteronomy 7, verse 6-9. For thou art an holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto Himself, above all people that are upon the face of the earth. The Lord did not set His love upon you, nor choose you, because ye were more in number than any people. for ye were the fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you, and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers, hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand, and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen, from the hand of Pharaoh king of Egypt. Know therefore that the Lord thy God, he is God, which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him, and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. Verses 11 and 12. Thou shalt therefore keep the commandments, and the statutes, and the judgments which I command thee this day, to do them. Wherefore it shall come to pass, if ye hearken to these judgments, and keep, and do them, that the Lord thy God shall keep unto thee the covenant and the mercy which he sware unto thy fathers. Mrs. Grant, our landlady, was present. She is an intelligent woman. She has a daughter who is married to a missionary, and they are doing good work in one of the islands. She has another daughter who is a school teacher, and a son who is a Presbyterian minister in Christ Church. Our being brought in connection with this family may result in bringing them to an interest in the truth. Oh, I hope and pray that they may see the light and follow the light and be saved. This meeting ended with a social meeting, and quite a number bore testimony. Satan has worked hard in this place to keep souls from obeying the truth. We pray that he may be disappointed, and that truth may triumph over error. I believe that there are many precious souls convinced, but the determined resistance and opposition of the ministers is building up barriers that they shall not decide. But God can disappoint the enemy. Monday, September 11th. Last night I spoke in Rechabites Hall. The seats were well filled, and it was much larger than the chapel we had used for the other services. Some were obliged to stand. I had much freedom in speaking upon the temperance question. The people listened with the deepest interest, and this has been the case in every meeting. Brother Codling, who came with Willie, was greatly strengthened. Sabbath he took my hand and shook it heartily, and said, "Senior White, your son did a good thing when he stopped over at Palmerston, and I am glad he urged me to come to these meetings. They are a great blessing to me." Monday he took dinner with us, and this little acquaintance will indeed be a blessing to him and to us. It is a rainy day, and I fear that I cannot reach my appointment at Norsewood. Sunday, when Brother McCullough was trying to catch his horse, he stepped upon a stub and sprained his ankle. Willie and Brother Codling had to help him out of the carriage. He could not use his foot. But notwithstanding this, he and Willie rode out in the pouring rain to Norsewood, 5 miles distant, to meet my appointment, and not have the people entirely disappointed. 55 were out. Some men and women walked 3 miles in the pouring rain. They had a good meeting, but they got very wet, for the rain continued to pour down in torrents. When they were about a mile from home, their carriage wheel set, and the rain still came down, but it was a good thing for them that they were very close to Brother Amazon, who had loaned us his nice buggy. Brother McCullough's sulky was at this place, so they transferred the horse into that and got here about midnight, well drenched. I dared not go out, for I felt it would be presumptuous. Yet I did hate to disappoint them so, and I cannot see how I can go there again while in New Zealand. Early Tuesday morning we had another packed up of bed and bedding to return to Hastings. We were anxious to get our American mail which had come to Hastings. Elder Wilson baptized 8 souls on the Sunday we were absent. Wednesday, September 13th. We have read a large number of letters, not all of a cheering character. One sounds out the wail of despair. We reached Hastings after a 4 hours ride on a slow, jerky train. We are glad to be here to tackle this mail. We will read letters this day that we could not wade through yesterday. This mail has given us increased work to answer some of the letters, but I feel so exhausted from our work at Ormondville that I cannot do much at present. Wednesday evening, I talked a short time to the company assembled in Brother Wilson's parlor for prayer meeting. I spoke in regard to the blessings promised to all who keep the commandments of God. 2 precious souls have taken their stand for the truth since I have been in Hastings. One is a sister, an intelligent, discreet woman, who is laboring wisely for her husband, Mr. Dunn. He has heretofore made no profession of religion, but the truth he has heard is doing its convicting work upon his soul, and he says it is the only preaching he has heard which has had any effect upon his mind. I could not stand and speak, so I spoke sitting. Our numbers were few, for it had rained hard before evening, but sisters Dunn and Blackwell, who had recently embraced the truth, came a long distance in the rain and dark. They say they cannot consent to losing one opportunity of hearing Sister White. Oh, may the Lord give me pure and holy words, the bread of life, which shall feed these hungry, starving souls. They seem to draw the truth right out of you. I believe that Sister Dunn's husband will be converted. Thursday, September 14th. Brother and Sister Wilson leave today to go 28 miles to visit a family who have recently become interested in the truth. One of our sisters was recommended to them to do their housework. She has had her books on present truth and has done some missionary work, and the sister, her mistress, has embraced the truth. Her husband has charge of a large sheep run, and he also has some interest in the truth. Sister Caro sent a request that Brother Wilson should visit them, and they went today. Willie, Emily, and I had a pleasant little drive in the forenoon. The sun shone brightly after the rain. Late in the afternoon, a young Maori of 16 years called upon us. We had a visit with him. He was the first one who became interested in the truth at the school, and who came to Brother Everson to teach him all he knew in regard to the Sabbath and kindred truths. He embraced the Sabbath and has been baptized. Another intelligent, promising schoolmate has also come out firmly upon the truth, and he has gone to America to study to become a medical missionary. And still another has a deep desire to go to school where these doctrines are taught. His parents have given their promise that he shall go next year. I have an idea that they think he will lose his interest by that time, but I hope he will be firm. There are many things of interest that I cannot write. Sabbath, September 16th. I spoke to quite a nice little company in the Odd Fellows Hall, used often as a chapel by our people. I spoke with the power of the Spirit of God upon me, while speaking in regard to the wickedness of the world, the earth being defiled under the inhabitants thereof, and the reason being evident, because parents have not for many generations back kept the law of God, and the Lord could not bless them and subdue their enemies, for they were the worst enemies God had. I told them that they would have persecutions and severe trials for the truth's sake, but they must not retaliate nor yield one iota of their faith. God is proving and testing us as a people. Angels of God are commissioned to watch over those who suffer for the truth's sake, and the dragon that now exists, that none will be more afraid of the wrath of the enemy of our faith than of the wrath of God. They lose the favor of God by their disobedience to the requirements of God, rather than to lose the friendship of their Lord's enemies. Not one of us can submerge our individual responsibility upon any human soul. The acceptance of the gospel of Jesus Christ reveals it as it is, an inherent, independent power that will not yield to circumstances. The voice of God in His Word calls to every man, woman, and child, as it called to Abraham, to keep the way of the Lord, to follow where He may indicate His duty. God is supreme. His will is to become our will. The light afflictions that we endure for Christ's sake will add to the exceeding and eternal weight of glory. If His own hand leads through deepest waters, Jesus has gone before. If the path be rough and severely hard to travel, Jesus has trodden the way before us. His footsteps are seen in that path, beating down the difficulties for the feet of the true follower. The louder and more urgent cry will ascend to heaven that God will give strength to endure and to obey Him, and an increased faith will come as He urges His way on through difficulties. And the inspiring faith will surely come from the source of all power and efficiency. While I was speaking, a man with a cigarette in his mouth and a little girl in his arms pushed his way through the gate and came into the entryway and put the child down and shoved it into the meeting room. After a few moments, the child found its mother, one of our sisters. She took her child upon her lap, and her husband motioned her to come out and leave the meeting, but she remained. He went out of the gate and then came back and again tried to catch his wife's eye, but she did not look once that way. After I had seen this, I spoke some words to our sister, telling her to look to Jesus, to love God, and have faith and confidence in Jesus, and under every difficulty, put her trust in Him, and the divine presence would surely be with her. but she must ever bear in mind that one is her master, even Jesus Christ. Him she must obey. Ye are not your own. Ye are bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19-20. The plan of salvation was a costly plan, whereby man may be uplifted, ennobled, sanctified. And if we will give ourselves to him, we will always stand under his banner, and we need never shrink or be ashamed to show our colors. We are Seventh-day Adventists. The whole universe of heaven is looking upon us to see if we individually appreciate the great sacrifice made in our behalf, if we estimate the infinite price paid for our redemption. This is the everlasting expression of love toward the sinner, the cross of Calvary. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. John 3, verse 16. Having made this great sacrifice, he will withhold no needful help that the soul trusting in him shall not receive. All heaven is waiting our demand upon it. It is the privilege of every soul to walk in the saving light, for they that followeth me, saith Christ, shall not walk in darkness. John 8, verse 12. Let every soul stand under the shadow of the cross of Calvary and say, Behold the Lamb of God who taketh away the sins of the world. John 1, verse 29. This is our message. John beholds the remnant people in these last days looking into the sanctuary above, and he exclaims, And the temple of God was opened in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the ark of his testament, and there were lightnings, and voices, and thunderings, and an earthquake, and great hail. Revelation 11, verse 19. The cover of the ark was the mercy seat. What was in that ark? Beneath the mercy seat in the ark were the Ten Commandments written with the finger of God. This people were presented to John, looking reverently upon the ark and the tables of stone within the ark, upon which were engraven, with the finger of God, the Ten Commandments. As John beholds this scene, he exclaims, Here are they which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Revelation 12, verse 17. The scene changes, and he sees the hatred and enmity of the world kindled against the people who love God and keep his commandments. And he with pen and voice proclaims, And the dragon was wroth with the woman, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and the testimony of Jesus Christ. Verse 17.